Well, my guest this morning was born in London. She went on to become one of the most glamorous, still is indeed the most glamorous and best-known woman in Hollywood. Her career has spanned over 7 decades and she has zero intention of retiring. And quite right. Joan Collins, good morning.
Hello, Ryan.
How nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you too. How are you?
And I'm good. And welcome to, can I say welcome to Dublin? I mean, I know you're where you are and I am where I am, but you know, you're on Irish turf now, if that's okay with you.
Oh, yes. I love Dublin. I haven't been there for ages, but you know, we've all been having to abide by COVID, haven't we?
Well, it's actually a conversation, Joan, I'm not even going to bother you with, because I think it's time to move the hell on. Would you agree?
Let's move on to more happier things.
Happier times,
like
your book and the stories that you have to tell. Let me talk about that word, the retirement. That's not even in your dictionary, is it?
Well, I don't see why, you know, because you're always going to have actors and actresses that are playing all kinds of roles, whether it's from toddlers to geriatrics. So I don't think that actors should retire.
And I notice still, maybe even more so now than before, when I talk to certain guests, Joan, that some more than others, particularly women, will bristle when I'm being asked their age. This is not something you tend to do.
I don't like the fact that whenever my name is mentioned in the newspapers, they put a number after it. I think that that's very sexist and ageist, and they don't do it to men. And I think that, you know, one might know that one is in one's 50s, 60s, 70s, whatever. But I don't think you should run it down people's throats all the time so that people say, oh, look at her. Do you know how old she is? You know, that I find it distasteful.
And what about the ongoing, because your diaries are full of these delicious stories of your time. And you look back, a lot of what you observe is surface, isn't it? Appearance. Yes.
It starts with my last day on Dynasty. I'm standing there sadly in the dressing room where I had spent 9 years getting dressed, doing interviews, having fittings. The room is about 10 foot by 11 foot. I mean, it's tiny. So it starts with that and ends that first time, the first bit I write ends with goodbye, Dynasty. Hello, the West End, because I was very anxious to get back to my first love, which is the theatre.
Yes.
And I was going to do an old Coward play, which turned out to be a great hit. And then I talk about doing the interviews and the auditions for the play, for Private Lives, which I was going to do, and how we interviewed various actors, Tom Conti, Keith Baxter, Edward Duke, and it's not all cocktail parties, Ryan.
Of course.
There's a lot of meetings and lunches and discussions of business. There's a lot of business in it. There's a lot of what it's like to be an actor, what it's like to go up for a role and lose it, what it's like to be, you know, at the top of the heap and then you come crumbling down, and to accept that and to know that that's going to happen. It's like somebody said to me when I was on the cover of every magazine and I was extremely popular, blah, blah, blah. They said, Joan, what are you going to do if this all changes, if this all stops? And I said, it isn't a question of if, it's a question of when. Mm. Because this degree of fame is never going to last. And you just got to accept that it's not. And I shall just go on and continue being a jobbing actor.
Where did that come from, Joan? That is a very uncommon sense of self-awareness and perception. And I'm not trying to plumose you. I'm simply saying that when you get to the point that you're winning a Golden Globe, you're winning an Emmy, you're one of the most sought-after stars in the world, but you still think like a jobbing actor. That's the perception and self-awareness I'm talking about.
Yes, well, I think it's probably because I come from a show business family. I had aunts, grandmothers, and uncles who were all in show business. My father was an agent. He did not want me to go into it. He said it's a profession that has absolutely no way of making sure that you have a proper living. There's no living standards. Then you know you can have a great job for 3 months in the West End, and then you're out of work for another 10 months, and there's no security. It is a job with no job security at all. And he said, just think of yourself as a book in a library, a lending library, and people will come in, borrow the book, read it, and then put it back in the shelves. And that's what it's like. That's what being an actor is. And you have to accept that. And if you don't accept it, then you're in the wrong profession.
Your father had pretty quality advice when it came to you as a young actress regarding men in Hollywood.
Yes. Regarding men, not just in Hollywood, regarding men in general at that particular time, young girls, young pretty girls were fresh meat, as it were. And when I went to Ealing Studios to do my first film, I Believe in You, I had a lot of problems with, voracious men who did, I won't even go into the details, sure. But the bottom line was that Daddy had this thing, well, even in the groin. I did try to do that a couple of times, but I didn't always hit the right spot. But anyway, I did, in one of my films, I had to be hidden in the wardrobe, in the actual closet in the wardrobe, because of a very voracious producer who was determined to get me. There's a lot of stories about that. There's a lot of stories about what it was like. But it's not just women. It's not just women in show business. It's women in general. It's women in offices, in shops, in fashion, in anywhere. Thank goodness it's just getting so much better now, but it's still not good enough. But it's gone in the opposite direction. I mean, now apparently somebody said to me the other day, oh, you look great. I love your dress. And I said, thank you. And somebody said, you can't say that to her. Yeah. I said, what are you talking about? They said, it's politically incorrect to pay a compliment to a woman. Well, I mean, that's just, forget about it. That's just ridiculous. it has gone in the opposite direction anyway.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
But as you're describing the life for women, and as you say, they might work in shops. It's not just Hollywood circles and so on. Do you think that you were better equipped as when you were growing up through going through the system, maybe than other actors and actresses who really kind of suffered in a way you didn't, because you were well minded and well guarded and guided?
Well, I still suffered. I suffered. I lost roles because of not going onto the casting couch. But I wouldn't do that because that went against my morals, which were quite strong at the time in one, in that particular way. And the other way, and this is what I write about in my book, and I felt that because I was a feminist, I had no compunction about, having relationships or affairs with men who I liked, who I fancied. And in that way, I felt that I was an emancipated woman who was living her life like a man in a way and would not be the shy young virgin. I was the shy young virgin, but unfortunately, I was raped, and I unfortunately married that man because of guilt, which was not a good thing to do.
And that the cruelty of that guilt is something that is meted out to women generation after generation. Is that something that you've had trouble confronting? Was even talking about it, writing about it, was that very difficult for you?
No, I did. I wrote about it. I talked about it. I mean, I've written before my diaries. I had written two or three autobiographies in which I had gone into great length about how I felt at the time. And in fact, somebody said, when I came out with it, they said, Joan, why did you never talk about the fact that you were raped before? And I said, I did.
Yes.
In quite some length. But, you can't talk about the same thing all the time.
Of course,
Now with my unapologetic diaries, I didn't write them. I spoke them at the time, which is why they have a great immediacy about the events that I talk about and the meetings that I had with people talking about, trying to get a job or not getting a job or go to chapter one and read it. It's,
of course.
It starts with December 1995, for example. And it's not every single day.
The death of Princess Diana is something that looms large, because she was somebody you clearly admired and whose company you enjoyed.
Yes, when I talk about having been on a boat nearby, when she was on a boat with Dodi, who I knew, I'd been on a plane with him coming in from California about 6 or 5 months earlier, in which he said he was looking for a girlfriend. But I had met Diana, Princess Diana, several times, and I write about those times in my book. I really thought she was wonderful. I admired her greatly.
Can I ask you about the fact that on you go, when you think about American Horror Story, you know, it's cult viewing at the moment, Ryan Murphy's program, and there you are, like you're always in the thick of it.
Yeah. Well, I certainly was in the thick of it in American Horror Story, because they had a scene where my son is supposed to stab me to death while I'm lying in bed. So they told me, I said, how are you going to do this? And they said, we'll show you. So I go onto the set, and they've created like a coffin.
Yeah.
And they said, get into the coffin, but let your head stick out. So I said, okay. So I'm dressed in my costume, and on top of the of my body, they pick a they put a facsimile of my body that was stuffed with all kinds of blood and giblets and tomato ketchup, God knows what. And they put that on me, and they said, this is what the actor is going to stab. And I said, well, what do I do? They said, you just lie there. It's not going to hurt. Just do the facial expressions. So I said, okay. I was petrified, because it was very uncomfortable, and I was stuck there with this dead piece of, you know, fake mannequin on top of me. And Percy and my granddaughter Miel were there, and they were saying, oh, don't worry, you'll be fine. And then all of a sudden somebody says coffee, and everybody disappears, and I'm lying there in this coffin with his body on top of me, and there's nobody around. I'm saying, Percy, Miel, I'm here. Please come and talk to me. It's horrible. Anyway, so I do. Finally, they came back, and the actor stabbed me repeatedly, and I did the screams and the yells. It was, and when you see it on the screen, it's quite realistic.
Oh, that is brilliant. And you know, but I just love that you're game for it. You know, you do. Some people might say American Horror Story, oh, that's ghastly. It's gory. I'm not sure if I, but you're like, sign me up. I will sit there. I will lie there. I will, even on the coffee breaks, I'll still be brilliant. I mean, that's commitment.
Well, yeah, I hope so. Well, you know, that's what you sign up for, really.
What I'm trying to say is, Joan, is that I think other people would be a little more precious about these things.
Not everybody. You know, I mean, for example, in Titanic, there's no way I could have done what Kate Winslet did, running through. But mind you, she was 20 when she did it. So possibly I could have done it then. But, I mean, and they actually were in that water all the time. And also all the stunts, I would never do stunts. Linda Evans in Dynasty always insisted on doing her stunts. She said, Barbara Stanwyck told me I must always do my own stunts. And I said, well, Gene Kelly told me that I should never do my own stunts because I'm putting a stunt woman out of work. He's a bigger star than Barbara Stanwyck.
Oh, I love that. I mean, it's so funny. You're kind of, I'll see your Barbara Stanwyck, and I'll raise you with Gene Kelly, and we'll see.
Yes.
We'll see where
we go. Well, it's not, you know, a lot of people say, well, there's so many names you're dropping in the book. I'm dropping those names because I work with these people.
Yes.
My first film, I worked with giants of the English film industry, Celia Johnson and Lawrence Harvey and Godfrey Terwill. I mean, people may not, Cecil Parker, people may not know who they are today, but then they were huge. But so when I, you know, went to Hollywood and started working with Bette Davis and Richard Burton and Gregory Peck, it was just, okay, so, you know, these are my compatriots, these are my peers, although I was always a great deal younger than everybody at that time.
And I was just thinking, because there's so much talk these days as well, the last week or two, about William Shatner, your co-star in Star Trek at one point, and he's going to space. And as the more I'm talking to you, the more I think you should be a candidate to go to space because you're saying, no, come on, Joan, let me pitch this to you. Okay, imagine I'm Jeff Bezos for 1 second. It is time for a woman who has made her mark on the world in Hollywood, but who is also no interest in doing anything but keep ploughing on and being brilliant. Why shouldn't she head to the stratosphere?
Why?
Because if Shatner can do it, Miss Collins can do it.
Well, it's not my cup of tea. It really isn't. I mean, I don't go on those fairground things that go around. So I'm not about to get...
You're not going to go in a teacup. You're not going to get in a shuttle. Is that it?
I was nervous. Yeah, I was nervous when I first got on that Concorde the first time.
Okay. Do you know, I enjoy your regular... articles in the Spectator magazine, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I think you have a lovely way with words, as we know from your books, but just in the terms of your diary, you've got a great, dare I say it, anthropological way of looking at the world and at people. I don't think you care about how much they're worth necessarily or what job they do. You're just curious. Yeah. You're just curious. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, I'm very interested in people. I love... sitting in a cafe and having an espresso and watching the world go by. You can do that in Paris a lot. I haven't been to Paris for so long. And it's very interesting. Even at the train station, I was up in Manchester the other day, and I was just sitting on the railway station looking at people going by. People are endlessly fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And as an actor, I think, I really like to study them.
Isn't it amazing how we call it dynasty, you say dynasty, but that's dynasty, it kind of drifted off a little bit in terms of, and I say this respectfully in terms of relevance, but it seems to have come full circle in terms of fashion, but also statements about female roles and, life broadly. I mean, dynasty is culturally something of significance. Is that too much to say?
I think it epitomised all the excesses of the 80s. It epitomised a lot of the excesses in terms of hair,
shoulder pads,
in terms of money. Yeah, well, people have been wearing shoulder pads since the 1930s, Ryan. If you look at movies made in the 1930s and 40s, it stopped in the 50s. But, you look at Joan Crawford or Jane Fontaine or Barbara Stanwyck, they also had huge shoulder pads. And men have always had shoulder pads. I think it was the balloon sleeve.
Okay, okay. I am. That is a faux pas on my part, and I apologise.
It's not a faux pas at all. Yes, they definitely have come back. As far as I'm concerned, and nevertheless, I wouldn't dream of wearing a suit without shoulder pads or a coat or anything.
I might rethink my attire on the chat show on a Friday night now.
You wear shoulder pads. Look at your suit and see what's in it.
I'll try it.
Okay.
Can I mention your late sister, Jackie, for a moment? Because I would have met her a couple of times briefly. But you know what I have, strangely, from her in my desk? Is two cards, handwritten, to say thank you for it. It is a very rare, unusual thing to receive from a guest. But I always say it's something you say. They must have been very well brought up,
I think so. But I think that she genuinely liked to do that. And what she also used to do later is that she would take pictures of herself. Or somebody take them and have them developed and send them to you. Do you have a picture with her?
Only from the state, but not sent by her. Yeah. I just have her card with her name, for her dress and things on the top of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see that? She was great like that.
Yeah, she was very, very, very thoughtful indeed. With regard to you, Joan, I mean, this is you're on the interviewing situation now. You're talking to people like me, and I presume all around the world, and. It life is still as it seems to me. Talking to you, you're as engaged as ever. You're as curious as ever. I mean, the show goes on.
Yes, I'm very lucky, Ryan. I happen to have very good health. I've taken care of myself all my life. I've eaten very rightly. I mean, my mother had me doing exercises when I was 4 or 5. Sent me to dance school, was absolutely insistent. We always eat our greens. She gave us supplements. So that has stood me in good stead, I think. So, you know, I shall continue to work as long as I feel fit enough, and I feel pretty fit, I have to say, in spite of COVID. Oh, I've written the COVID diary, and I started writing, this time I'm writing it rather than talking it, started writing a diary in March of last year. In fact, I was one of the first people to wear a mask in Los Angeles when I got on the plane.
Yes.
I got on the plane to come to London, and I wore a black mask. And everybody was pointing at me and laughing. And I said, well, you won't be laughing so much. I just had a feeling.
Good on you, I have to say. Can I say thank you to Percy, by the way, for helping us out, for putting the call together, your husband? And
yes, of course. Yes, I will tell him.
Please, he's been very helpful. And I know that you are 20 years married next year. Is that right?
Yes, February. 20
Congratulations,
years.
Joan.
I know. It's wonderful. It's been a great marriage. It is great. I just hope it all continues as long as it can. Yeah.
I have no doubt it will. I'll tell you something. We met that one time on the Late Late Show in September of the year 2009, which feels like 100 years ago now. So
I know.
I'd like to take this opportunity to invite you back on the show very soon. The next time you're in Dublin, we'd love to see you.
Okay, we will. Yeah, maybe when the paperback of my Unapologetic Diaries comes out.
I'd love that.
Yes.
I'd love that.
Good.
You're a joy to talk to. I really mean that, Joan. Thank you so much for your time this
Thank
morning.
Thank you.
I wish you every happiness. Good luck with the book, and I'll see you in Dublin very soon, okay?
Okay, Ryan, thanks.
Thank you
All
so
right.
much.
Have That's, a nice day.
And right. to you, and the inimitable Joan Collins joining us on the program this morning. Her book is called, as you heard her say there, My Unapologetic Diaries. And they do what it says on the tin. Remarkable woman. I enjoyed that. No end. All right, let's keep going. The text number 51551.